the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Today we celebrate the memory of two saints, the great martyr Euphemium, who is also mentioned in the service that we'll be celebrating next Sunday, the service of the Fathers of the First Six Ecumenical Council, the icon of the Fathers of the Seven Councils, which is the third icon from the back over there, which will be out next Sunday. You can see her relics at the very bottom of that icon, because a miracle related to her relics was a very central part of the Fourth Ecumenical Council. The Fourth Ecumenical Council dealt with the question of whether Christ had two natures or not, and there was those that denied that he had two natures and those that proclaimed the Orthodox teaching that he had two. And the tome of St. Leo the Great and also the Confession of Faith of the Monophysites were both placed in the reliquary of the great martyr Euphemia, and when they sealed her relics and then later reopened them after prayers, they found the tome of St. Leo was in her right hand and the tome of the heretics was at her feet. And that's the reason why the Catechism talks about heresies being put at the feet of the Orthodox. Also on this day, we celebrate the memory of St. Olga, who for the Russian Church is a very special saint. She was the grandmother of St. Vladimir the Great. And though St. Vladimir gets the credit for having brought about the conversion of Russia, it's actually a little bit more complicated than that, and his grandmother had quite a bit to do with it. But even she was not the first Christian in Russia. There were a number of believers and even a church that was built in Kiev that was dedicated to the prophet Elijah. It's one of the reasons why the Russians celebrate the prophet Elijah with greater solemnity than they do many other saints of equal rank. That church was dedicated to the prophet Elijah in part because the Russians, their rulers at least, were basically Vikings that came into the area of what's now the Ukraine. And the story that's found in the Russian Chronicle is that the Slavs were always fighting each other, and that they said to the Varangians, which was a tribe of the Vikings, you know, come and rule over us. Well, it might not have been quite that simple as it's recorded in the Chronicle, but nevertheless, the Slavs weren't able to govern themselves, and these Vikings came in and did establish a rule, and so these two cultures intermixed. And St. Olga, her name was actually Helga in Germanic, and Helga means holy. If you know Silent Night in German, Helga Nacht is Holy Night. And of course, the Vikings, as they were pagans, didn't quite have the same understanding of holiness that the Christians did. But nevertheless, they did have some understanding of holiness that had some contact with the Christian meaning. And the fact that she was named Helga was sort of prophetic, because she became a very holy woman. But I got sidetracked. Why did they dedicate this church to the prophet Elijah? Well, as Vikings, worshiping the German gods, Thor being a very primary deity, and also the Russians living in a forest where fires very often destroyed villages, were very concerned about fire, and they were concerned about lightning that started fires, and so they had a great devotion to Perun, which was the Slavic name for Thor. And so the Christians, when they came there, just dedicated this church to the prophet Elijah because they wanted to show that the prophet Elijah was able to call down fire from heaven. And of course, he rode to heaven on a fiery chariot. And so basically they were showing that you're wrong about how fire works, and we can show you how it really does. But in any case, there were Christians there, and there were, as a matter of fact, there was a treaty that the Byzantines made with the Russians, or Rus, as they were called then, and they required that the baptized Rus swear their oath in the church, and that the unbaptized Rus had to swear their oath in their temple of Perun. And so this was well before the time of St. Olga. But she married the prince of Kiev, Igor, and bore him a son by the name of Sviatoslav, and her husband was murdered around the year 945. At that time, she was still a pagan, and she became the regent because she was the mother of the heir to the throne, and she wreaked revenge on the group of people within the realm that had been responsible for the murder of her husband, and showed herself to be a very adept military ruler. And she also went on a building campaign and did all kinds of other civil reforms within the realm that greatly improved the empire. And so even before she became a Christian, she was known as Olga the Wise and was very highly respected. And she continued to rule up until the time that her son reached the age of majority. But before that time, she went on a diplomatic mission to Constantinople. And so to make sure that the Byzantines didn't think that they were just dealing with some podunk tribe, she brought a whole armada of Viking longboats up the Bosphorus to go and visit, pay a visit to the emperor, and of course did so with the intention of establishing new treaties, and was greeted with great fanfare. And we have accounts of this from the emperor as well as from the Russian chronicles. But when she went to Constantinople and she saw the churches and she began to learn about the Christian faith, her heart was open, and she embraced the Christian faith and was baptized along with a maid-in-waiting, I suppose you might say, by the name of Malusha, who later became the wife of her son. And she was baptized by the patriarch, and her godfather was the emperor. And so she brought back Christianity with new force back to Kiev, although not everyone instantaneously converted. And after her son, she had attempted to convert to Christianity, but he was old enough by that time to where he had his own ideas, and he did not embrace the Christian faith. Although, as I said, he married a Christian himself, and she gave birth to Saint Vladimir the Great, who was raised as a pagan. But nevertheless, when her son took the rule, gradually there was a backlash against Christianity. St. Olga had built many churches and had brought many people into the church, but the pagans didn't take everything lying down. And so during this period of time, they burned churches, persecuted Christians, martyred many Christians. But because St. Olga was the mother of the ruler, or the prince, she was left alone herself. But nevertheless, she boldly continued to confess the faith and made everyone promise that when she died that she would be buried in the church that she had built, the Church of Holy Wisdom, named after the great cathedral in Constantinople in Kiev, which happened. Her son respected her wishes. And her grandson, Saint Vladimir, saw the wisdom of his grandmother, didn't immediately embrace her faith, but later on in life, he too sent emissaries to Constantinople. He didn't go himself, but they were the ones that said, we didn't know whether we were in heaven or on earth. They, as I said, were not the first ones to come to this realization. It was his grandmother that did. And because of her example, St. Vladimir embraced the Christian faith. And so today, the Russian church, in all of its various national forms in the Ukraine, Russia, Belarus, and outside of Russia, is the largest part of the Orthodox Church. I believe it's about two-thirds of the total of the Orthodox Church to this day. So this one woman's decision had such a huge impact on the history of the Church, and we should be grateful. But one lesson we should take from this is that the time that she embraced the Christian faith, the Russian people were going through a great period of upheaval, and there was change in the wind. There were many people who came to recognize that paganism was not true, because they saw these great empires that believed in one God, and they knew that there must be something wrong with their own superstitions, and so they began to question. And we live in a time that's very much like that. Unfortunately, America was a Christian nation, but not an Orthodox Christian nation. And we are in a time when that consensus of faith that we had in this country, and also we could say throughout the whole Western world, has begun to deteriorate. But this actually presents us with an opportunity, because in the 1950s, if you were an Orthodox Christian and you were trying to convert your average Protestant or Roman Catholic to the Orthodox faith, you probably wouldn't have been met with very much receptivity. But today, Protestants and Catholics that are pious and sincere are increasingly coming to the realization that there's something wrong with their churches that have gone off the deep end, and they see the deterioration in the culture and in their own churches, and they're now open in a way that they haven't been open. And we are seeing many people embrace the Orthodox faith, and we as Orthodox Christians all have a responsibility, because when Christ said to go forth into all nations and preach the gospel, he was talking to us. And we have this opportunity before us. We need to inform ourselves about our faith. We need to live our faith. We need to reach out to those that have questions. We want to let everyone know about the Orthodox faith, but some people are not open to it. And we shouldn't waste a lot of our time on people who don't want to hear the truth. But Christ tells us about that in the Gospels. And we can only pray that one day they will be open, and maybe they will. But the fields are not always ripe at the same time. Some people's hearts are not ripe now, but they might be down the road. But when you encounter those that are receptive, we need to make the effort to reach out to them and try to share our faith with them and bring them into the church. It's a great opportunity. It's an unpleasant time when you're in a time of great change and upheaval, but it's also a time of opportunity, and we need to have the kind of faith to stand in the face of all that kind of those trials and tribulations that St. Olga had.